Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 81 for March 19th, 2008. Click the throbber. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, ladies and gentlemen. And we're all in a little bit of a mirthful mood because we've just been listening to Orson Welles selling canned peas. It was all Merlin's idea. Hello, Merlin man.
Good morning, Leo. How are you today?
43 folders. There's no way anyone can say 43 folders. Show me a way.
Bring me a jury. Show me out in a sentence with emphasis on in, and I'll...
Yeah, never mind.
Switch to Windows.
Switch to Windows. Oh, wow. Andy Anatko is also here from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. Hello, Andy.
There's so many different ways to respond to the direction that I'm being given at this program. Now, if you tell...
We're all going to talk
I kind of want to go with, you know, George Harrison and Let It Be. If you want me to play loud, I'll play loud. If you want me to play soft, I'll play soft. Paul, just tell me how you want me to play and I'll do it.
Poor
George.
If you
don't want me to play, I won't play at all.
Don't you feel for George in that moment?
Poor George. I was really surprised. I keep reading these interviews with people who knew him well, and everyone says it just irked him that the Beatles weren't bigger than they were.
How could you be any bigger?
And that's the sort of thing you just press pause on whatever you're listening to and just let that sink in for a moment.
Wow. Yeah.
A fully armed and operational battle station is clearly what he had said.
I want the Death Star.
Really, yes.
I find your lack of faith in magical mystery tour disturbing.
Also here, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
And this week in photography,
a
featured podcast on my Apple TV, I'm proud to say.
A featured podcast. On your Apple TV, even though there's not much. I guess every week we put something
out. As long as you do one video.
We do a video every week.
Yeah. They think it's a video podcast. Yeah. Scott Bourne cannot be with us. He is out choosing his new Porsche. I'm sorry, Mercedes. I suggested the Bluetech. What was it? 370. It was only 74.5 Alex's. I thought that was a deal.
Deal.
You asked the important questions, though. What kind of iPod dock connector does it come with?
That's the key, isn't it? Don't all the Mercedes... I don't know, but I thought... I actually
understand that's why Scott's buying a new car, because the old one gives him that error message when he plugs his iPhone into it, so he had to throw out his $53,000 BMW.
He needs it. He's trading up for an iPod connector. I think that's fair. I think that's completely fair.
Some people have standards of excellence.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, some people have standards of excellence, and this should not be mocked.
I think that a good Dremel tool and a hot iron, and you build anything you need into that.
You don't do that to a Beamer, dude.
Oh, you just got to be creative.
All right, let's talk about Apple, because there's a lot of stories in the news today. I'm so glad we moved this show to Wednesday. And by the way, yes, this is the new day. Net at Night and MacBreak Weekly have swapped on the TWiT network because Apple kept coming up with announcements on Tuesday. And once again, they did it again. Yesterday, with they're pushing out a few updates, Safari 3.1, a security update. Was there anything else? It seems like there was a third. I don't remember.
You know, I hadn't checked for a while, so I saw those ones, and I saw a whole bunch of other stuff that I had forgotten about.
Right.
No one, and so on.
I did have the big mega upgrade, because I had too many projects going on in the past 2 weeks to actually upgrade to point two.
Right. Oh, that's a big upgrade. Yeah. Did you do that?
I finally did that last night, and along with every update to iLife, every update to everything, it was more like, you know what, MacBook, I'm just going to go away for a while. I'm going to come back. If you're here, great. If you're not, I understand.
If you added up, I think it was 100. It was probably 600 megabytes, all that stuff.
Yeah, it was
huge.
It was there was a tectonic shift in understanding.
Is it downloading in the background?
Yeah.
Does it download? So now it's downloading all the stuff in the background. When you choose it and say it's already sitting on your computer, and you just so that random time when you suddenly can't figure out why it's pulling 180 kilobytes
maybe
a second.
Maybe that's it. Yeah.
It's grabbing all those updates.
Maybe is this just me? This is something that really bugs me. If you know, then after it does all that, it says, "Okay, now we have to restart," which is great. I think it's good that Apple is that's a very sensible thing, is to do the installs after on a restart, so nothing's running. And so I think that's a big improvement. However, if something prevents the restart, my mail, because I'm using IMAP, mail always stops the restart. It takes forever to quit. Then when you do it again, it has to download everything all over again. Does that happen to anybody else, or is it just me? It seems like it doesn't remember that it got that stuff.
Mine gets very confused. If I don't stop everything and concentrate solely on letting that happen, yeah, and go through, and sometimes do the boot cache thing or whatever at startup, it seems to go like it's a little autistic about knowing what happened at all, and it seems to want to start everything.
That's what I'm talking about. Yes.
Yeah, I totally get that. Yeah.
It's kind of annoying.
I've become, I'll say as a very slight rat hole, I've become that guy now where when I get the pop-up, even if it's a security thing, I wait a couple days now. Just because, like I mentioned to you off air about how, you know, of course, anytime Safari changes, all my plugins get bunged for a few days. And now, now people are saying they got SSH crashing. Have you guys heard this?
Gruber's been talking about that on his blog, daringfireball.net. He says,
That's an unfortunate one to have crash on you.
If you use it. I mean, I think it's probably a small number of people that use it. I use it all the time.
Well, if you're a command line person, it's arguably the most important command you've got, probably.
Yeah. I haven't. It's on Apple Discussions. 10.5.2 updated to Safari 3.1 and security update. After I did this update, I can't use the command line SSH client anymore. When I start SSH, I immediately get a bus error on the shell. And then a number of people are saying, yes, same here, same here, same here. I just tried SSH. I haven't had a problem. So I'm not sure what the solution is. Let me scroll down through. There's a very long thread on the Apple Discussions.
Because I'm the furthest thing in the world from a Unix person. I know enough to destroy my hard drive. But that's kind of the beginning of any kind of work you're going to do for most people. Well, I think there are a lot of people who live their whole life off one box in another state.
Here's the fix. Instant Hijack, which is a part of Audio Hijack Pro. It's causing the problem. I'm just scrolling down to the bottom of this. So if you unload Instant Hijack, SSH works. This is why it's so hard to test software. This is what Microsoft's nightmare, because there's so many ways a Windows machine could be configured. But as the Mac world gets richer and there's a lot more stuff going on in the background, you're going to see more stuff like this. Rogue Amoeba has a tech note and a fix at their website.
It's kind of funny, though, when you get outed as a user of a certain application in a way that you kind of hadn't expected.
Well, who would expect that would ruin SSH?
It turns out that it was a BitTorrent client that would only cause problems if you were using copyrighted material.
It's that porn downloader that everybody's using. That breaks it.
It's the pornulator fix.
That would be embarrassing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be the modern version of the Emperor's New Clothes. It's saying it's the most wonderful, most stable operating system on the planet. As a matter of fact, the only thing that could ever cause a technical problem and a call to technical support would be if you're downloading pornography that your wife doesn't know about.
I think right now your iPhone, Andy, is downloading pornography. We hear it.
I keep it on because...
It sounds like that Christian Davis movie.
Is Pauly Shore? It's hard to tell. Sometimes you can't tell. Yeah, that's Pauly Shore. I recognize it. Okay, now it's nice and quiet. Busted! And not because busted!
I'm busted for loving my iPhone. Aww. I wanted to be connected to my loved ones.
He never wants to stop iPhoning. So, anyway, I think it's, 3.1 seems to be a little bit faster. Yes, we agree, or no? I've been using WebKit, so I'm not really... But I went back to 3.1 just to play with it, just to see. And it seems faster. I can't tell what else has changed.
I would just say that there are a couple of different web apps that tend to sort of, to baff up Safari. And coincidentally, they're both newsgroup. They're both news readers, Google Reader and Blog Lines. I just happen to note, I don't know, this isn't conclusive because I've only had it for a day, but I've noticed that I haven't gotten any of those script errors that I usually get after 20, 24 hours.
Excellent.
Usually I can count on at least once every 20 to 24 hours that, hey, sorry, this is running slowly. Would like me to terminate it, thereby wasting me more time by forcing me to tab back into the browser to dismiss this thing than it would just to simply run it slowly. But
I wish Apple would do a change log or something just so that you understand. Well, I mean, actually, they do say quite a bit. Add support for CSS3 web fonts. A lot of standards stuff.
This is stuff that really got me interested because, fortunately or unfortunately, Safari has always been at least two steps ahead of everything else in terms of web design and in terms of new standards. There have been people who have asked me, because I've got things like nice drop shadows on a lot of my CSS styles, and they show up really wonderfully, obviously, in Safari, but they don't show up any place else. And I've actually gotten like tech support on my site saying, gee, how come I've got a problem with Firefox? They render properly. And I have to say, well, unfortunately, it is a standard, but Firefox is too busy doing things that only people who are doing like double stack TCIO in Pakistan would really, really appreciate the cool stuff for doing CSS and making websites look better. So, I mean, is this just part of Apple's master plan to make sure that anything that works on a Macintosh must look four times better than it can on any non-Apple product? Because if we have sites that look absolutely stunning an Apple branded browser, but look like crap under Firefox or Explorer. That's interesting.
Well, here's the question: Do those features come in as part of the open source WebKit development, or do those features come in as part of something Apple's doing in house? You know, is it the K browser? Is it WebKit? Is it Apple? I mean, it's hard to tell who's doing what. I don't know.
Yeah, I did check out WebKit.
I love WebKit.
Yeah, I did check that out. Like as it happened a couple nights before the update got pushed, and I think I did see those new styles supported.
WebKit is now it's very stable, by the way, even though it's a pre-release. WebKit.org. I think we made it a pick a couple of shows ago. And there are nightly builds, which is a little much of a pain in the butt. You have to download it every day when you first turn on your machine. You download a new one. I'm looking at the change log, and this is probably the part that you got fixed reader. Under compatibility, increases site compatibility. Under stability, improves application stability. That's it.
Yeah, I was really hoping for extra onion compatibility and swing set compatibility. What the hell is site compatibility? What?
You know, they're going on and on about SVG images and the image elements and CSS tags, improves site compatibility. I don't know. I wish they'd be a little more forthcoming. Is it a security thing? Maybe they don't want to tell people what they're doing.
I'm just curious as to, you know, why not just say things like site look pretty or
good
computer go more
good security update fixes AFP's client server, fixes some holes in Apache, in AppKit, quite a few holes in AppKit, changes the German translation of the application firewall preference pane. Which I think
finally
they fixed that.
My hovercraft is fine.
It used to say Zugriff auf bestimmte Dienste und Programmen feistigen. Now that might lead a user to believe the listed services were the only ones that be permitted to accept incoming connections. So now it says something different. It doesn't give us the translation. Clam AV. I didn't know Clam AV. Oh, it comes with OS 10 server. Okay.
Unfortunately, my clams are analog. Maybe it's time for an upgrade.
My clam was in the AV squad. Cups Emacs is fixed. Well, that's good. Actually, you know what? I take it back. There is at least on the security fix, there's a lot of fixes.
Is Cups in there automatically now? Because I noticed you don't have to manually load it anymore.
Yeah.
Do you guys do many reinstalls from nothing or almost nothing on OS X?
I just did one on my 17-inch, which was acting very flaky, really. Beach balling all the time. So I just started over with Leopard.
Did you FSCK? I'm finding actually a lot more.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I always start
with FSCK. Do you force it?
Mm-hmm. I do single user mode and then come up as FSCK-FY.
Go step by step so people can follow along. So you reboot the machine and hold the S key down. Is that how you get
single? First of all, just a tiny bit of history. Is that I'm sure and the days... we all probably remember this. I'm sure Andy in particular does. If you remember the days when he's old and important in the field, but mostly old. There were days when you really needed Norton utilities, like you needed like your car keys in your wallet.
Oh, yeah.
There were so many problems before OS X. And over time, just even normal usage of your hard drive would lead to all kinds of problems. And a lot of that has gotten fixed to the point where now, I mean, a lot of disk repair stuff, short of the Disk Warrior kind of stuff, is really just voodoo. But that said, in my experience on OS X, if you start seeing a lot of beach balls, even with relatively small things going on, like if you notice like slowdowns with your browser in particular, and beach balls going, and you're kind of locked up, and
yeah,
you can't change
that was what was going on. Yeah,
I'm gonna say 75 to 92% of the time, it's because you have a very small bit of disk damage.
I bet you're right. And of course, what I did is I did a clean install with a format.
Right, which is like putting poop on a cracker. You need to kind of fix the basic stuff. So what I would do is, and this is old stuff to probably almost every single person, but restarting what's called single user mode, which means you tell your computer to restart. And after you hear the ding, hold down Command S, Apple S, and it'll come up with a command line that'll be very confusing if you've never seen it before. But all you need to do is type 7 characters, F-S-C-K space, and then dash F-Y.
And what does that do?
And hit return. That is, Andy or somebody smarter than me, help me with this, disk. It's a Unix command that checks.
File system check.
Yeah, so basically, if you've got a journal disk, which is what OS X is, it's going to run through and look for anything that it thinks looks goofy. And then I forget whether it's the F or the Y, fixes it for you automatically. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm not giving any bad advice here. I think this is pretty sound.
No, I think that's absolutely right. It's a check disk for Windows users. It's something that Windows does all the time.
It's also, if you've ever started up in safe mode, where you start up, it's kind of like the old, remember back in the day, we'd start up with the shift down to shut off your extensions. I believe, I don't know if it was with Tiger, but starting a few years ago, if you start up in safe mode, it does this check automatically for you as well.
Oh.
That's why it takes so long to start up in safe mode.
Yeah. Excellent.
One note, though, that sometimes you have, if it will give you like text, like error messages, if it tells you that it found some things that needed to be fixed. If it does fix anything, it's a good idea to start again and basically you need to run. I've never pronounced the boy. It's just you think those words and you're thinking, I'm going to make sure I double check that and I don't pronounce that the way that I should not pronounce it. But run said utility once again, because oftentimes it'll fix something, but the fixes will allow it to see more problems. Right, you just need to keep running it until
nothing comes up.
Are you wasting my time, sir? This disk is perfectly good.
I've done a man on FSCK, and the dash F, it says force FS check. I'm going to call FSCK FS check.
Yeah.
Force
Y is just automatically fix it, I think.
Force F, no. Listen carefully to what you're telling people to do.
I is delete everything.
No. Force, this is what it says, dash F, force FS check to check clean file systems when preening. Okay.
Preening?
When it's preening. Yeah.
Did it say preening?
It says preen.
Oh, my.
FS check preens a standard set of file systems or the specific file system. That's what it's doing. It's preening. Now, the Y says, I'm quoting, assume a yes response to all questions asked by FS check. This should be used with great caution, as this is a free license to continue after essentially unlimited trouble has been encountered.
Wow.
So you might not want to use it. Except that it's going to give you a lot of verbose stuff that you probably won't know what to say yes or no to.
That makes me wonder if there's some kind of built-in no-clobber stuff, because if you start up in single-user mode, it'll tell you right there, here's how to run from SBIN, run FSCK.
There kind of has to be, because as you were asking me what the proper usage of the thing was, I just did a double check on Apple's support page just to make sure I knew what I was talking about, and it actually does tell you to use the FY switches. So
I think what the man page is saying is, look, if you really have a foobard drive, saying yes to everything could end up losing all your data. But you're doing this on a fresh drive anyway, right?
Also, you have to realize that the Unix man pages, they have one of those chin beards and suspenders, and they start every answer with an anecdote.
Right. Also, remember it's called man page.
I was at Johnson Space Flight Center, and we had a disk pack that wouldn't mount because it was an old Winchester subsystem. Whereas go to Apple's apps, technical docs, and it'll just say, look, here's what to do, here's what it's going to do, here's what to expect.
Well, on the other side, Apple's technical docs are going to they're going to say whatever they can to limit the number of tech support calls they get. So what they don't want you to do is call up and say, well, okay, well, now it's asking me this. So it's just saying, say yes to everything,
If you ask most women, they'll tell you that man has a known issue, which is called male answer syndrome,
yeah.
which is whether it knows the answer or not, it'll pretend that it does.
And we've just demonstrated that right now.
I think the listeners of the show are all familiar with that.
Oh, yeah. I know how that works. Sure. Yeah. You got your internal combustion Johnson rod, of course.
There was a paper that was published in 1968, which documented both a test group and a control group, in which 8 men, I think 3 of them were Scandinavian, 3 were Canadians, but it's still valid results.
You're BSing.
I don't know.
Now,
you're talking about Penfield Winchester et al. 68?
No, because that was invalidated in 73.
That's what I was going to say.
Unfortunately, he falsified. He was using a Randix type dispersion on the statistical analysis. He should have used a Sperry type dispersion. So basically, his scatter vector was totally off.
If you run that back through and do a little bit of Monte Carlo analysis on it, you'll find that the spread on that is actually perfectly cromulent.
You know, and I like to take the whole thing and just run a Butterworth filter over the.
If you don't get that Johnson rod fixed, though, you're going to run into trouble.
Well, see, the thing is, it has sinusoidal replenation. So if you don't have a freestanding base plate of reframulated amyloid, Merlin, you're going to want to cheap out and go with a copper base plate. But unless it's been preframulated and unless it's got an amyloid content, you're going to get screwed. Okay, you're telling.
I had one of those. My dad.
I will not let you do that, Merlin.
I learned to Geflinken on the Flavin, and I found that sinusoidal replenilation fully drains the Flavin.
Hey, did you hear that Gary Gygax passed away?
You got to bring the room down.
That started it. That did it. That stopped them all.
Ooh, no, I don't want to be a D&D person. I'm sorry.
He's rolling natural 20s in heaven right now.
Excuse me. Your paladin does not have the correct level to cast magic.
Actually, I believe you'll find that if you've been wearing high hard boots, this would not have been a problem.
It wasn't a trap. It was a natural weakness in the cave wall. So therefore, your spell was not going to have any effect, and your party is now dead. Maybe now you will listen to the Dungeon Master when he says there are cobwebs on the top of the cave entrance.
You inspect carefully, you'll find there's remainders of a gelatinous cube that could have been not put into the bag of holding. That would have caused too much heaviness, whatnot, for the carriage of this turn.
I've got your bag of holding right here, and I'm holding it right now, Merlin.
I'm surprised there are not more fist fights in the backs of comic shops.
And in my experience, when you run this FSCK until you pee clear, when you restart, you will find that problem is gone. Now that said, if you've got really, really, really like thorny problems, two words, actually one word, probably Dyscwarrior. That's Dyscwarrior is what you need to fix these problems. But for the general, like Leo is getting beach balls, and we all know how painful that can be. Oof. Running FSCK, I think, fixes it.
I passed a beach ball last night, but I think I still got one to go.
Make sure do it so you run clear. That's the only way that this will
work. No, I think you're right. I probably should have done that. Now, I think having formatted, I don't have to worry because formatting preens the file system as well. So I think I'm probably preened enough. But we'll see. If they come back, then I'm going to bow to your infinite wisdom, Mr. Man.
But this was all in the service of saying, have you noticed the crazy huge footprint if you install all the printer drivers?
Oh, cups. We started with cups, didn't we?
Cups. The thing is, as I understand cups.
I don't install all those drivers. That's crazy.
I got just the one for Epson, which is my printer. I think it was the Canon one or the HP one.
And the languages. It's not just the printer drivers. It's the languages are hundreds of megabytes.
You got to turn those off.
Yeah.
Can you still do that? Can you do that in the options still?
It's culturally insensitive, Alex.
It is. What if somebody sends you a Japanese email?
Oh, hi, I'm a Japanese guy, and now I can't use Alex's computer. Thanks.
Ha! You know, didn't you listen to Barack's speech yesterday? All right, let's move on. We covered
that. Has anybody got a new favorite app for trimming that stuff after you've already done an install?
Yeah, because we recommended one at one time, which now I'm hearing is not a good choice.
We're so great for the advice.
Can cause problems.
I think type RM space dash.
My suggestion is do it in the installer. Don't do it. I really think it's risky to. Well, remember that program that we recommended, I don't remember the name of it, not only removed language resources from the operating system, but from applications as well. It was aggressive as heck. And it saved a lot of space. But at what price?
At the price of everything but English.
True.
There will be no German.
If English was good enough for our Lord Jesus Christ, it ought to be good enough for my Mac.
That's true. Nobody speaks Aramaic anymore. I heard you can remove your library file and the whole folder and nothing goes wrong. That's a lot of that is just marketing in the library.
No, not listen to that man. He
go
is
to the
evil.
Top level slash library.
RM-RF/library. And you'll save lots of space. And you can then use your computer as a wonderful doorstop or
Application support? What am I, a child? I don't need application support.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, everything you've heard on this show up to this point, please fully disregard. We cannot be held responsible for what happens to your Mac after you listen to Mac Break Weekly.
Listeners, I was going to say, it's usually a good idea to listen to the entire show from start to finish. Don't be hitting pause and then going to do things. I totally should have said that.
Oh, God, we're in trouble.
After I did that,
there went the hard drive.
Something like 75 or 80,000 people listen to this show. What percentage of them paused right after that and did it?
You should just have an announcement every few seconds in a very calm woman's voice that goes, don't do any of this.
Please, do not listen to these gentlemen. They know not of what they speak.
Put your mouse down.
We'll make it even simpler. Folks, when we're talking using these voices, we're lying or making stuff up. However, when we use a wacky voice like this, that means we've tested and tried it, and you can trust it fair dingum fur to finish.
Make sure you got lots of backups.
That's how it's true. Okay, so other big story. Other big stories are, of course, that Apple is mulling a subscription plan. But better than that, the same kind that Nokia does, where they pay a fee to the record companies. Nokia pays $80. Apple says, we'll pay $20. And then you get lifetime, for the lifetime of the device, access to the music libraries, which would be cool. You buy an iPod, pay what? I don't know, $100 extra. You know, get the iPod Deluxe, and then you can download unlimited music as long as that thing works. I like that.
I just don't know how it would work. Would it work just with this one device?
Yeah.
I can purchase stuff that would give me 30-second samples when I'm playing it from my notebook. It would give me the full thing when I sync it to my iPhone or my iPod.
I think in this case, you'd just be able to download it for free and put it on that iPod.
But there would be DRM, because what it would do is it would have to check to make sure that you had that subscription and had for that device.
But the model already exists.
The iPod Touch is the only one that can download stuff directly from the iTunes store. So unless we're talking about...
No, it would have to sync with iTunes.
Well, then wouldn't that imply that for the $100 or the $20, I'm getting unlimited access via iTunes? Will it say, when I try to play this thing, will it say, oh, I'm sorry, you only bought that under the umbrella of your $100 fee for this iPod, so I'll give you the 30-second sample so you can tell what it is, but the only way to play it start to finish is when it's been synced and put onto this device.
Well, let me look, see what Nokia is doing, because they're the only ones doing this right now. They call it the comes with music.
I think that Nokia is assuming that you're going to download it.
Users will be able to download the tracks either via the handset, this is the Nokia plan, or a PC. Syncing songs from one device to the other will be possible. Tracks will be encoded in WMA DRM format. Obviously, that's going to change. It hasn't gone live yet. It will go live, they say, the second half of this year. And they don't say what will happen after your 12 months is up. So the free download is not for the life of the device. It is for 1 year.
But they're talking about
doing it for the life of the device on Well,
that's what it says here, but the Nokia plan, you know, what they're also saying is Nokia paid $80 for 1 year and Apple wants to pay $20 for the life of the device. I don't think so.
You know what I'd do if I were Apple? I'd figure out, and this is a very un-Apple thing to do, but if I were Apple, I would make it so that when you buy a new Apple TV, we give you a coupon that lets you go and get a year of this for free, or even 6 months of it for free. That would move some units. To say, like, from now on, here's your Apple thing, and by the way, if you want to go grab music for the next 6 months, go do it.
But you'd have to, I mean, Apple would have to charge more for the Apple TV then.
I guess so. I mean, that would be $100. That's the deal. You'd have to pay that. I'm just thinking that would be a way to move some units. Now you've got a home media.
Heck yeah. I wish they would do something like that for Apple TV. I just love my Apple TV, I'm sure it's stalled.
Yeah.
So that's, according to Nokia, Nokia owners who buy a phone, one of the handsets with this deal, will be given full, free, and unlimited access to everything available on the Nokia Music Store. So that, I don't know what that, I guess that means, Andy, yes, your scenario is accurate. You could listen to a preview, but you had to put it on a device to hear the whole thing. Mm. That would make sense. You're going to have to do something like that. Yeah, otherwise, you're right, because then your iTunes would have complete access too.
Yeah. I mean, the more I look at other services, the more I'm convinced that Apple has got to have a solution to the problem of always having to buy every single track you use and never getting anything, any real music for free. Not just with, you know, not just with Amazon selling you totally unprotected, totally DRM-free content, but I'm talking about so many other sources where you can pay either a monthly fee and get access to the entire library and sync it to certain devices, to services that will just let you listen to, you use internet radio, where they will license an entire library, an entire catalog of music. And so you could basically build a playlist for 10 minutes and spend the next 6 hours listening to full 256K right. music start to finish.
Well, I have to say, this was the model Yahoo Music Store used, and it was cheap, and they went out of business. If you buy a Zune, you can do that. In fact, when I was trying out my Zune, I had a month subscription to the Zune store, and that was great, because especially if it's your first device and you don't have a lot of digitized music, it is a good way to bring new users in, because you buy the device, and now you say, oh, I'll put that album. You fill it right there, and it's a great feeling. Now you have a device with a lot of good music on it.
The other thing I'm concerned about is that you are constricted by the way that the world was when you were a kid. And we're starting to have the first generation of kids that grew up with the understanding that music doesn't have to be paid for, that you can just go out.
That's what the music industry is worried about, isn't it?
Well, but it might be one of those shifts that they just can't fight at this point. I mean, it's really hard. It's starting to get hardwired in. So I'm not saying that when these kids actually have jobs and can actually buy things, that they're not going to want to actually pay for things. But a model in which you say, give us $10 a month and we give you free access to everything, might be more palatable to that generation of consumers than, oh, you want a song? It'll cost you. $100.
Or better yet, you buy the device and it comes with it for free.
I would take it step further and say that you're going to see people fighting to be the ones who are allowed to give stuff away on the iTunes store. I mean, I don't think that's radical to say that within 5 years, you're going to wish you were the one that had that channel in front of you. And if you don't have that, then people are going to be throwing money at Apple and other companies like crazy.
That's interesting.
Because this is a model that's dying, dead.
Yeah.
And like to just keep pretending like people, I'm sorry, this is, you may take a drink. This is our music conversation. But you know what I'm saying? Like to be on the platform, I'm not usually a big believer in the whole first mover advantage thing. I think that's kind of overstated. But if you could be the one who is the anchor tenant at Apple, going, you know what? Fine. Here's free samples of everything, and here's something.
What's
you can
the
download,
business model, though? You got to make
the
money.
The business model
this.
Is that then you come in, and you're first of all, you're getting people in the habit of seeing iTunes as the place that you go for all of your music. Right? It becomes that kind of that notion corner record store, except for a bajillion people internationally. And so what you're trying to do, if they are the platform that's going to be the place that people buy music, then there's a lot of money to be made. Like right now, do you understand? Like record companies give away like 2 CDs for every one that they sell right now. I mean, it's not like they're It's not like I don't have an exact.
Is that true? Where did you see that?
That's what I have heard. That I do not have a stat.
Giving away how?
I believe it.
In cereal boxes. What are they? Where?
No, you're constantly sending them
to record stores.
Well, to record stores and radio stations, but
giveaways on the radio station. I mean, I used to have when I
wait a minute. I don't know if that's everything. Does that make sense? I mean, let's say you have 100,000 selling album. You're saying that you saw 100,000 people bought it and 200,000 people got it free.
We should ask a friend of mine who's in the music industry to come and talk about this.
Jonathan Colton?
And I would I would love to have Jonathan on every show that I'm on. But no, what I would like to do...
Oh, I know who we'll ask. Next week, Patrick Wilson of Weezer joins us.
Patrick Wilson of Weezer? What are you talking about, Leo?
I'm not kidding you.
Are you talking about the drummer from one of my all-time favorite bands, might be on Mac Break Weekly?
He asked to be on Mac Break Weekly.
Are you sure it's him?
Well, he says he's Patrick.
He can't lie about something like that.
He says he's the drummer of Weezer. You wouldn't make that up.
You know what? We should have a drum off on the show just to prove he knows who he is. Well, there you go.
We'll see what he's. This is exciting. No, he's going to join us. You know what? There's a guy we could ask who would probably know something about this subject.
I would also.
Well, that disqualifies him from conversation, of course.
I do think
we'll shout him down. Don't worry. We'll just shout him down.
I do think that a hybrid, you know, of what Apple already has and this. I mean, we've talked about this before, but being able to have a subscription that I pay a certain amount and get a ton, I'd be happy to pay $10 a month or even $15 a month to just have this ongoing. I can fill up my iPod with stuff where I can still buy 256-bit, you know, DRM free if I really want.
Would you though? Would you buy music if you have this subscription?
Yeah, there's certain bands that I'd collect.
I guess that's true because I have a Netflix subscription, but I still buy DVDs once in a while.
Right. So,
because there is stuff you want to actually keep, and you want to be able to trust that a year from now you'll be able to get your hands on it.
I almost always regret buying them, by the way.
But more importantly,
like
I want to.
I mean, there's a difference between like Sunday go to meet and clothes versus like work clothes. It isn't like people go out and buy one shirt and that's all that they wear.
Do you have Sunday meet and go to meet and clothes?
I do. I have a very fancy hat that I like to wear. It's got lots of feathers.
The front wheel of your bike is like 2 yards wide.
What do they call that in The Wire? It was her church platter. What was it called?
Omar's grandmother.
Yeah. And they shot it. What was it called? Yeah. Her church something.
I forget. Her church bonnet or something
It was like a platter or something strange. Anyway.
But I'm just saying it's a terrible metaphor and there's hardly anything about it that makes sense. But you understand that when things do eventually become a commodity, there's still lots of people who are going to buy different versions of it.
Well, understand, we're going a step further than this. The end user doesn't really write a check for anything.
You're saying iTunes should rent pants.
I'm saying iTunes comes with pants. You get two pants with every suit.
I think that's a model.
If you look at Nine Inch Nails, we were talking about this on This Week in Media last night. Trent Reznor gave away his album and has made $1.6 million.
They're very happy. Yeah, in 10 days, they made $1.6 million.
I'm kind of sick of hearing people blog about this as another sign of the death of the modern music model. I mean, there's a Steve Martin routine that starts, I'll give you a two-step process to make $1 million and not pay a cent in taxes. A two-step process for make $1 million and not paying a cent in taxes. Step one, get $1 million. Step two, because when I'm seeing, step two is when the IRS comes after you, just simply say, I forgot. But what I'm getting at is that, this proves that, the middlemen are unnecessary. They're dinosaurs. And this is how all this music is going to be distributed. And it's like, okay, well, here's your wonderful two step process on how to make $1 million for millions of fans on the internet. Step one, get 1 million fans. Step two, put your album on the internet. I mean,
yeah, I would say that Trent Reznor has not gotten much help from his label for a decade. I mean, almost everything that he sold for the last 10 years or 15 years has been driven completely by his own work.
And Andy, wouldn't you say that the record industry is looking pretty hard, pretty desperately for new business models?
Absolutely. But this is kind of an absurd example. The good examples on how to make money distributing your own content, guys like Scott Kurtz, he's the sterling example.
PvP Online.
Exactly, the boy genius cartoonist of PvP Online, he's not making enough money to start PvP Co Enterprises, the international conglomerate that does cartoons, movies, TV shows, and canned rice. But he make a comfortable living off the fruits of his own labors without having to cut the profits up between himself, distributors, a syndicate, and that sort of people. I think that when we see this big revolution 20, 30 years from now, you're going to see a lot of people making a comfortable living from their music. We're not going to have the sort of people who have own three giraffes sort of money. We're going to have people who are making decent money, but not the sort of huge successes that a lot of people are sort of hoping for when they dream about how big they could possibly make it in the music business.
But I don't think that most artists that I used to work with when I was in the music industry, they weren't dreaming. They were dreaming of people showing up at their show, not dreaming of making millions and millions and millions of dollars. Now, I have to admit, they were in the alternative rock thing and they were doing their thing and they just wanted to keep on making a living doing it. And I think you're absolutely right, though. I think that the age of the superstar is probably on its way out. And we're going to see much, people making a more reasonable amount of money, good money, but not millions and millions and millions of dollars per album, because I think that machine is going away.
According to the Financial Times, which broke this story, subscriptions would be available or possibly could be available on the iPhone devices because Apple has that monthly billing, while the comes with music model would work with iPhones and iPods. And according to their source, which is an inside source at Apple, the only sticking point, the entire discussion hinges on how much Apple should pay. One Apple executive is quoted as saying, it's who blinks first and whether or not anyone does blink. But if Apple gets to the point where they're offering closer to what Nokia is offering, $80 a device, why? I mean, the record industry's already said we'll do it with Nokia. Why wouldn't they do it with an iPod? I mean, there's a chance to sell a lot of music.
I think Apple's argument about the $20 is that, Nokia is charging $80, but we're going to sell, 10 times more iPods than Nokia is going to sell phones that have that service.
Sure. So you sell what do they sell now? 1.5 million a quarter iPods. How many do they sell?
I think it's
more than that.
A lot more than that. I don't remember what the number is, but I think it's more like 10 or 20 million.
So 10 million times $20 is probably more money than the record industry is getting from a lot of sources.
Yeah.
Well, also realize that record industries have a great motivation for doing great things for companies other than Apple, because now they're really, really scared that if Apple continues this level of success with the iTunes Store, they could be in a position ultimately where they can't ask anything of Apple, where Apple dictates the terms and they step to it. That's, I mean, if you take a look at the Hulu.com, which finally went live this week, that when NBC and Fox and all these other producers pulled their content from the iTunes, their TV shows from the iTunes Store.
Oh, more importantly, from YouTube. I mean, that was even more of a...
Well, I think the big deal was that they're no longer willing to get $1.99 per episode of House downloaded. Now they want to give it away for free, but they want to be able to control exactly who gets it, who gets those ads.
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't work with Video Box, which is a big bummer.
Well, Hulu, they say, has done very well. But I think that's initially. Will people continue to sit in front of their computer to watch? They have like full length movies. They have The Usual Suspects on there. But will people?
They've got The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, they have The Lebowski.
I've got the movie page in front of me right here, and I see as many movies here that get me interested in sitting down and watching a movie as I see on the iTunes.
I agree, but will you watch it on your computer? How do we get it on our TV?
A lot of people will. I mean, the answer to that is to get an Apple TV, not get an Apple TV, but to get a Mac Mini.
And that's what I have.
Yeah, I think that's a real geek thing to do. I don't think most people are going to hook a computer up to their big screen TV.
But are most people going to be willing to spend $3.99 to get a movie for 24 hours as opposed to getting it for free and getting it however
much they want? I think the jury's out on which model is a better model. I really do. Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, if these guys were really, really interested in monetizing their content as great as possible, they'd say, look, Apple, here are the keys. As a matter of fact, we'll put a Pokemon keychain on it. Keep the big lights up when you press it. By all means, enjoy it. Have fun. Make us as much money as possible. I think that there's an interesting sort of back and forth going on here, where studios are willing to take less money for more power, hoping that the more power will translate into more money in 5 years.
Well, I think that the other risk that they're still running is that if Apple gets too much control in this area, and they already have a lot of music, and if the subscription service would be one of the final nails to really just owning the industry. There is a point, and we get back to the Nine Inch Nails thing. You said, you know, the step one is to make a, is to have $1 million. But the question is for these big artists, why would you use, like, when your record contract runs out, like REM just did, or if you're Sting, or if you're Alanis Morissette, or someone who can do that, why would you work with your label when you can just go directly to iTunes?
Well, and this is what keeps the label in the mix, because only a label can make a deal like this.
If Sting came to Apple and said, I want to sell my stuff directly through iTunes, they'd sort it out.
Well, no, wait a minute. No, they wouldn't sort it out. What, I'm going to pay, I'll pay $99 for my iPod, but if I want Sting, I'll pay $105?
No. I'm saying if Sting wanted to put his own music on...
On iTunes, yes, but not this subscription. That's what I'm saying. This subscription model keeps the record labels in the mix because it has to be an aggregator.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why the record labels are interested in this. By the way, Apple sold 22 million iPods in Q4 2007, so that'd be almost $500 million, even at $20. And you go up to $80, we're talking $2 billion. We're talking big bucks here that Apple can move a lot of. Now, would it be on every iPod? I don't think so. Would it?
I still think you're looking at a hybrid model. I don't think you're looking at one or the other.
Well, that's the question. If it's on every iPod, in other words, if it's just a surcharge now on every iPod, and Apple probably could give up $20 per iPod, right? Then it sells more iPods. The iPod market is stagnating a little bit. Wouldn't you be much more likely to buy it? I'd buy a new iPod if I knew I could fill it with music for a year. Or would you?
I don't know that I would do that. I mean,
why not?
There's the idea of, first of all, actually a perfect example. I mean, when I, the first damage in the pulling of all Fox content from the iTunes Store was when I desperately needed to get a copy of an episode of House because my TiVo didn't record the last 15 minutes of it. So I'd seen all the blank walls. I'd seen 3 misdiagnoses of lupus, but I didn't know exactly what had happened to this poor woman. And they pulled all those episodes from the store, so I couldn't get it. But not only that, but they'd pulled every episode everywhere. And so now the four or five episodes that I had on iTunes were the only episodes that the only iTunes encoded content that I would ever get. So what happens when you have the super duper, I've got all you can eat access to the iTunes store for a lifetime, but then someone pulls a certain track back. And that happens to music as well. There are times where I've bookmarked, I've saved certain tracks I'm thinking mm-hmm. about buying, but I'm not in the financial league to spend 99 cents on this track yet. But then I'll double click on it to finally buy it. And it says, sorry, this is no longer available on the iTunes store. When you have access to something that you own, meaning that this episode of House that I bought a year ago, it's mine. And as long as I back it up, I will never be without this episode.
Do you think people think of that, though? I mean, you think that, I know you're thinking of that, Andy, but do you think most people are thinking of that? Oh, what happens if they pull it?
Well, that is a good point. But I mean, every experience is a good experience till the first time it gets soured, and then it kind of gets tainted almost forever. I mean, if there is a track that you always, that's part of your standard playlist that you just always listen to, and then a year from now, let's go to a worst case scenario, because this is the internet and we want to be negative. Let's just say that your favorite song, suddenly Apple no longer has the licensing rights for it, or the licensing rights as applied to this all you can eat metaphor have expired. Suddenly you try to play it from your playlist and it's disappeared, and you try to find out why, what happened to it. And you get that error message saying, yes, this piece of music that was on your computer for the past year now is no longer on your computer because we no longer have the right to let you have it.
Well, but I think when you look at this, though, I'm still looking at the issue of, if I really like that song and I'm listening to it over and over and over again, you know, I'm going to buy it from Apple.com, or I'll go to, if it's not on iTunes, if it's not on iTunes, I'm going to go to Amazon.com and buy it, because Merlin says that that's the place to go to buy music. And so I'm going to go, you know, there. If it's not there, you know, I'm going to be able to find it to buy it. If it's that important, if I listen to it over and over and over again, you know, I can pay the 99 cents for it. You know, it's the what I love is the idea of being able to casually experiment, you know. And I think that what's even more interesting is the ability to build playlists where everyone doesn't have to pay to listen to your playlist. So I think there's a viral ability that you can do with subscription that you can't do with paying, where I can put together 60 songs that I think are really cool. And right now, everyone can listen to them, and then they can buy the ones that they think are ones that they think are keepers, or enjoy it for the moment, and so on and so forth. And I think that viral ability is something that is one of the most important parts of the subscription model. People being able to share what they think is great music, because that's what we're missing right now, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's one of the many reasons why Apple just has to do something to give people all you can eat access. Every time, whether it's a formal site like Zune, whether it's just a simple website like a Last.fm or something, the ability to just sit there and listen to music just based on a whim, not without having to dip into your wallet, that's incredibly powerful, and that's something that Apple desperately needs to get into.
So we're agreed they need to do it, and it seems like a great way to do it would be to just build it into the price of the device, right?
Well,
I think it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the price. I mean, I seem to think that it's okay to spend, you know, $9 a month for access to Rhapsody. I'm not sure, but however, I might balk if I had the choice between buying a $199 iPod and a $299 iPod, and they look exactly the same. If I were there in the store, I would probably say, well, geez, I can walk out of here with an iPod and $100 in my pocket.
Well, that's an interesting question. Will Apple have a premium version of the hardware, or will it become with something that just comes with all the hardware? Or
I think the perfect thing for both the artist and I'm not saying that Apple's going to do this, but I think the perfect thing for the artists and the labels and Apple would be really a monthly subscription. I pay $10 a month, and X amount of that goes back to the copyright holders, whoever those are, whether it's the label or whether it's an individual artist or whatever it is. You just look at, because Apple's going to know what percentage. So if I took 50%, if the Beatles come out and they took 50% of all the downloads that month, then they get half of the whatever the booty. You know, there's a pool created.
That's an interesting way to do it.
So what happens is that
what a peer-to-peer service ought to do.
Yeah, I mean, because the thing is that now what happens is, but Apple can do it in a way because they can manage it. They have codes for everything. They can see what's being downloaded by everybody. And so what happens is that if I, and what's more important is, if I'm an individual artist, if I promote it on my webpage, for instance, and I get 2,000 people to download my song off of iTunes, I'm going to get more money that, you know, from that promotion. I don't have to persuade them to buy the song. I just have to persuade them to listen to it, you know? Or if I build a playlist, for instance, that 1,000 people subscribe to, you know, suddenly everyone in that playlist benefits from the fact that I put all of that, that I put their song in there because everyone is downloading it and listening to it and so on and so forth. And so it creates a marketplace, so to speak, where people have a vested interest in doing it in iTunes. The bands have a vested interest in doing it in iTunes because they're going to make money just by people playing it. It's a great model for them, I think, and a better model than just handing money over to the labels, which aren't going to give them any money in the first place.
Well, here's another twist, just to make things even more complicated. What's to stop Apple from doing the same thing with independent unsigned bands that they're doing right now with independent unsigned programmers with who want to develop iPhone apps? Let me, as a band, just apply to put songs into the iTunes store. Apple, you take a 30% split. I'll take 70% split. Just let me put my stuff inside your store.
Well, they do that already. It's called CD Baby.
Really?
I mean, you know, that's what CD Baby does. I mean, if you want to get your... If you want to get your song into iTunes, you send your song over to CD Baby. Now there's Film Baby or whatever, and you can do film, you know, short films or long films or documentaries. And CD Baby is kind of a clearinghouse so that you can get it into iTunes. What Apple doesn't want to do is send 20,000 checks for $10 out. They let CD Baby worry about that. So CD Baby is essentially your label.
It's a clearinghouse
into iTunes.
Yeah.
So that's how that's been handled up until now. It's easy to get into iTunes as an individual band, but I think that what's interesting about the subscription model is that there is a threshold that isn't required to just listen to the song and to be shared by the song. And you're essentially if individuals are making radio shows, for instance, like I would make a radio show immediately if there was a subscription model where I could, and Apple should make a tool that lets you do this, where you could literally build a playlist and talk about different songs and create your own little radio show like a podcast, but it's actually playing the songs, you know, that are there.
That's an interesting slice on this that they'd have to license that with the record companies, but boy, that would be.
No, you wouldn't. What you would do is you'd make your own tracks. You know, within that thing, it wouldn't actually, you know, you would be making a show that people listen to.
It's just a playlist.
It's just a playlist that you can annotate it with your own, right. You know, the key is letting people annotate
it. It's like their mix capability, only just doing it live.
Yeah. You know, or not even live. I can build, you know.
Well, you could do that right now with the mixes.
Yeah, but the problem is that people have to buy all those mixes. You know, they buy every song.
So if you have an all you can eat plan.
I could make a 2-hour show.
Suddenly this works.
That I build, you know, build up the show and it sounds like a radio show and it has all the stuff. But what it's doing is just simply activating those songs.
Well, they already got it. All you have to do is put a play button on that. Once you have this subscription model, put a play button on all those mixes.
Exactly.
Already got it. It's already there. Everything but the subscription model.
Exactly. It's not. There's nothing about this that would be very difficult to put together. And the key is that I still think that if I'd be much more comfortable as a consumer wanting to support artists, if the money went to the copyright holder, and it doesn't matter whether that copyright holder is a label or an individual band or anything else, you know, I can, Apple's going to create a pot and redistribute that money to whoever is in that pot. To me, I think as a consumer, that seems like a fair distribution, depending on what the percentage is of what I'm paying. But let's say half or 40% of what I'm paying is going back to all the artists and Apple, you know, whatever, the overhead and profit and everything else, take it. But the point is that I think it creates the opportunity for bands to come out of nowhere and not, and once again, like Andy said, not make millions, but possibly make, you know, a living or be able to buy a new guitar or something without having to sign their souls away to a label.
So have you ever heard of Spiff?
Spliff?
It's pronounced Spiff, but it's XML format, XSPF.
Oh, I've seen about it. What is it for?
So I've heard some talk about this, and this is kind of interesting. It's an XML format for playlists, basically. And it sounds like there's a lot of things that you can potentially do with this. I just think, I don't know if you guys knew more about this than I do. It's just something a friend of mine told me about. But it's kind of interesting to think about a world in which we have a standardized way to share the kind of stuff that Alex is talking about.
Should be.
Or for that matter, it could be an album.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think it's, I see very much what Alex is talking about, but I see that also being something where, you know, maybe when the labels are ready to do this, maybe what they put out is some kind of a controlled version of this. And again, really up in the clouds. What if someday all of your media lives in a cloud somewhere and you basically turn the key and then have access to it from wherever you are via something like this XML?
I want to table this discussion. I think we're going to have much more to say when we have Patrick Wilson on with us next week. Since he's an actual...
Is he the drummer? Is he the drummer from Weezer?
He's an actual drummer from an actual band that has an actual recording contract. So he'll join us next week, and I think we really should discuss this in greater detail. We have other stories. I think, you know, we cannot ignore the Charlie Rose taking a tumble to save his MacBook Air story.
That man is committed.
That is commitment. Charlie Rose doing the show with a Band-Aid over his left eyebrow and a shiner. Looks like he was in a bar fight. Turns out he stepped in a pothole, and instead of falling, as any sensible person would, on his MacBook Air, he sacrificed his face to protect the computer. He held the MacBook Air up and hit the pavement with his face.
And he's in television.
This is a man who loves his air.
Wow.
Story two.
Well, so the thing is, he just missed a great opportunity. He could have made enough to buy two more MacBook Airs, because if you put that on eBay, a MacBook Air with like a perfect imprinted cartoon like mask of Charlie Rose in the aluminum, wouldn't that go up to $4,000 or $5,000?
I tell you, I'm sad. I'm sending my Air back today. It's so sad to see it go. But I still like my MacBook better. And you would bounce off of that. You wouldn't
think my wife is getting an Air.
Is she?
Yeah, she's thinking about carrying the baby and carrying, yeah, you know, everything else.
That makes sense.
She's been kind of like, you know, she kept on asking me, how heavy is the Air and how small is it?
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And you can pack it up with your New York Times and recycle it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I told her. I told her to be careful with that. I'm not buying you a second.
Stephen Levy at Newsweek did that, yeah. We talked about that last week. So here's a really interesting story, and then we'll get to our picks. Adobe says it's going to make a flash player for the iPhone. Doesn't care what Steve says. They're just going to do it. Mm. Chief executive of Adobe, Shantanu Narayen, said, "We believe flash is synonymous with the internet experience, and we are committed." This is the CEO. "We are committed to bringing flash to the iPhone. We have evaluated the software developer tools, and we think we can develop an iPhone flash player ourselves." Of course, Apple would have to say yes, wouldn't they?
Yeah,
I mean, it'd be hard to do without Apple.
Yeah, I mean, the software development kit, it looks like it specifically makes sure that you can't do cool stuff like that without Apple's permission.
You couldn't distribute it. You have to distribute iTunes.
Forget about distributing it. You couldn't even build an application a system enhancement of that low level,
right?
And build it with the software development kit that they've released. Now, it's possible that they're going to do something that would legitimize the third party. We need a new term for the illegitimate bastard iPhone development community. It's possible they could do something to legitimize the folks that are still building apps without this SDK, without any signing from Apple. That's the place where you can actually now still go and download apps for your iPhone today, because there's still a very, very thriving jailbreak community. If Adobe were to say, you know what, if Apple doesn't let us do this legitimately, we're going to produce a version of it that will work with jailbreak phones, and we're going to basically keep this entire
idea.
Segment of the population alive.
I don't see Adobe doing that. Look, piracy is a big issue for them. The last thing they want to do is get in bed with people who are violating EULAs. I can't see Adobe doing that. And the fact that this guy has looked, apparently, or his engineers have looked at the SDK and they believe they can do it, you're right. They can't hook in as a service into Safari. That's just not possible with the SDK. But they could write a standalone player.
Hmm. But would Safari pass along the URL and handle it correctly?
No, they couldn't do that. They'd have to enter URL directly into the player, right?
Yeah.
And then can you do that? I don't know. But it sounds like Adobe thinks they can. Now, remember, the jailbreak community is not sitting still. They've got a dual boot solution now. They've got all sorts of hacks. I think you're going to see all sorts of third-party apps for them. I just don't see mainstream developers getting in bed with these guys just because, you know, they're EULA breakers.
Well, it's interesting to see. It's good to see that Apple. I think one of the reasons why Apple is going to create such a rich experience for developers is because they know that they have this competition. That if developers scream for a certain feature or a certain ability, and Apple refuses to give it to them, there's still this again thriving community of outside developers that will let them do this. I mean, just yesterday, I haven't updated the apps on my jailbroke phone for a few weeks. Downloaded a brand new camera app that gives me a self timer, that gives me variable exposure. Downloaded a brand new RSS catcher that will that updates the podcast directly, a whole bunch of games, a whole bunch of accelerometer and gravitometer games. You know, if Apple doesn't give me an experience that is as rich and fulfilling as what I get just through the handset, just through this really wonderful palm top browser that lets me just look for apps and get them and start playing with them immediately, this is the rabbit they're going to be chasing for the next year.
Although now you see why Apple slammed so hard on the jailbreakers and the unlockers with that firmware that bricked the phone. Apple wants to send a chilling effect, and I think did. I think I'm much more reluctant to jailbreak my iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be said that I do have two iPhones.
Yeah.
One is plain vanilla, the other is jailbroken.
Yeah,
I'm glad
I
have both. But
yeah,
if I had to choose between one or the other, I would definitely keep the plain vanilla
one. Take the pristine, you bet. Same with me. Especially now with this SDK. I'm excited about the stuff we're going to see. So I don't know. I mean, I think the jailbreakers will continue, and I applaud their efforts. I think it's very important. But I think that most iPhone users now are going to be very reluctant to do jailbreaking. And especially now that you're going to get third-party apps. So if I don't get Flash, so what? I just think it's interesting they think they can do it. That's what's really interesting.
Well, also, there's a certain product I can't talk about because I had a really great demo of it yesterday under NDA. It's going to be released next week.
It's a telescope, right?
No.
It's a huge telescope.
It lets you see heavenly bodies almost as if they're there.
What's it do?
No, because you know how like sometimes like you have to carry a phone and a flashlight? Well, this application will turn the phone into a flashlight. That's one less thing you have to take with you, man. It's brilliant.
Don't they have an iPhone app that's a cigarette lighter, so when you go to concerts you can hold up your lighter?
Uh-huh.
I think
there's
they
also,
do.
There's also an iPhone app that's essentially "Hello, my name is" tag. You just type it in and then you hold it up.
There used to be a Trio app that would turn it into a mirror. It would basically throw up solid black, and so you could look into your Trio and use it as a mirror.
Ooh. You could do that. Can't do that on the iPhone. The camera's on the wrong side.
And blacker. Oh, that's true.
But sorry,
Andy.
I'm in it too. All I was getting at is that there are a couple of really great apps coming out that rely on Flash. That don't use just JavaScript, don't use just CSS tricks to give you a really slick user interface. They're using Flash 9 in order to give you that kind of an experience. And obviously, these are all designed to work on notebooks and desktops as opposed to palm tops. But if this is where a whole bunch of development starts to go, if these huge, and I messed up my metaphor by when I was on Twitter, I didn't want to tell people about, I couldn't break my NDA, but people were asking, I said, well, look, if you were to name five really big companies, I guarantee you'd guess the name of this company. And of course, no one guessed the name of the company. So I guess I was wrong, but it is a name that you would all recognize and you would all say,
if you guess 10 really big companies, you'd get it.
It's going to be Beard Papa, right? It's going to be Cream Puff Technology.
That's Talking Moose. That's a web app. Finally.
Oh.
Users,
you know, where is the Talking Moose for the iPhone? That's a really good point.
It's true.
Yeah, I'm running out of... I'm sick of just annoying people with my iPhone just by talking loudly in movie theaters on it. I want a new way to annoy people on
I want
iPhone.
Tiny Elvis. Let's take a break. Anyway, we're going to get to our picks in just a little bit. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if this becomes an important part of the web, a lack of Flash support could be more than just not being able to see YouTube movies in YouTube. It could become, here's this great web application that works great on Trios, works great on Nokias, but does not work on the iPhone.
Well, and not just Flash. I mean, I think Air and Silverlight. You've got to have those on any credible portable platform.
Well, the question, though, is that Apple has ignored other people before, and I think that the real question is going to be, once again, who blinks? You know, you get to a point where if the iPhone gets big enough, then you don't build mobile stuff with Flash because no one can use it on an iPhone. If the Flash mobile stuff gets big enough, then then Apple has to blink and put it on the iPhone. So I think it's just a matter of, I think we're still in kind of an arms race to figure out who's going to get to that point first.
And if Google Phone really does take off by virtue of the fact that it's a great OS and it's free and anybody can put it on their device, they say, come on aboard. Go ahead. You sure all you want to do is Flash? Hey, do Flash 10. Do Flash 30.
Or you can do SVG on the iPhone. All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back with our picks of the week, our software picks. But before we do that, I want to get our audiobook picks. It's time for our visit, our weekly visit to audible.com/MacBreak. Audible is, of course, my favorite spot to go get my audiobooks. I am hooked on them. And I have a recommendation if nobody else on the panel does. But let me just mention that it's audible.com, and if you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you can sign up and get a coupon for a free book, a credit toward a book, and there are lots of books, 45,000 plus in the U.S. library. Plays on hundreds of different devices. You download it, you get it instantly almost. I mean, it just takes a minute or two, depending on your download speed. Then you've got the book. You can listen to it on the computer. You can burn it to CDs. You can put it on your iPod or your iPhone. I just love audible.com, and I was listening to a great book, but before I talk about it, I want to give you guys any, Andy, you got a book you want to recommend, or Merlin or Alex, any books?
I just downloaded a new one. The Spartans.
Sparta!
Sparta! Well, I got into it. I have to admit, I have a bad habit of, if I see anything that's remotely historical as a movie, I have a bad habit of, you know, checking up all the Wikipedia stuff and then reading all the stuff. And then this is kind of finishing off my, the zone that I got
in. There's a lot of Spartan books on, I mean, I see here's a book on Thermopylae, right. Which is the battle that, of course, 300 is about. The Peloponnesian War. I mean, yeah. this is great. So you got The Spartans by Paul Cartledge?
I did. And so far, it's good. I just started it. I got it last night, and I just started listening to it on the way home, and it's very good.
It's history.
And it's just nice to be able to acquire that information without actually having to use my eyes, which I like.
And it talks about Lycurgus, Lysander, King Leonidas, and Helen of Troy and Sparta.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Was Helen of Troy also of Sparta?
I don't think so. Hold on.
That's what it says here. Well, that's a good recommendation. If you're a fan of the 300, you're going to want to know more about the Spartans. And this would be a good choice. Andy, you had one you wanted to recommend too, it sounded like.
Yeah, I had one. This is Alan Bennett is a name that you don't really think.
I love this. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. He was part of the original Beyond the Fringe group.
Oh, was he?
Yep, absolutely. That's exactly the point. I mean, Peter Cook was in there. Uh-huh. Dudley Moore was in there. And they became like really, really well-known comedians and film performers and TV performers. Alan Bennett, he decided to have a career where he writes really brilliant plays and becomes a really good radio monologist. But all British. And I'm choosing probably the most British thing in the Alan Bennett archive. It is a autobiographical story called Lady in the Van.
Oh, I haven't read that.
He owns this really nice house in a very nice part of I believe northern London with an abandoned van on the property that he needed to move, and then one day this little old lady just comes in and decides she's going to live in the van. And in America we know that, okay, well, quickly get the kids out, let's move out of the house, and let's get the police in, and let's get the fire hoses in there and drive her out of the van. But again, he's English, so right.
There's a lady in the van.
And so this is the story. And it sounds like he's making it up, but this charmingly eccentric borderline, she obviously did have mental problems, but just this relationship with this woman who just lived in a van on his property. They had interactions. She was very proud.
This
she
is
had
a true story?
Like, this is a true story. Oh, and funny. She lived in that van until she died. It's funny, it's touching, it shows you how relationships work. Most of all, you like it because Alan Bennett just knows how to tell this story without making either the woman or himself look like idiots. But it's just, you're just sitting there, your jaw is like half agog thinking, but Alan, surely this is the point at which you didn't drive her to the doctor and then drive her back from the doctor's to the van. Surely you had her committed after you took her to taking her to the doctor. That was a good idea because she was clearly injured, but you didn't have to take her back at this point. At this point, you need to
this is like my wife. My wife would have done this. She would absolutely do this. That's so funny.
So very charming story told very well. It's also read by Alan Bennett. Who is you don't want like Tucker Anthony reading the story.
No, no,
you
no,
need
no.
someone with passion and and wit to actually tell it.
These are, I think, the other stuff I've read from or listened to from Alan Bennett is from his BBC readings. I don't know if this is also. I just read from him An Uncommon Reader, which is a wonderful novel or short story, maybe a novella about the Queen of England discovering the world of books at 80, and it's just he is so great. It's kind of a coincidence. Yeah. I'd never heard of him. My mom suggested it. And now I'm hearing it from you too, Andy. So two great recommenders. We got two today. The Lady in the Van by Alan Bennett and The Spartans. They're kind of different by Paul Cartledge. You pick which one you want.
They'll be firing different portions of your brain. So you want to alternate chapters, definitely, to get the
get the to really ramp up the confusion. That's the beauty, though, of Audible. I mean, when you have 45,000 titles, it's a library. It's really a library on your computer that you can download a book anytime you want. I just love it. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support. And just go out and listen to a book. You're going to love it. Now it's time for our picks. That's a great pick, by the way. Thank you, Andy. Our picks of the week. And who would like to raise? Show of hands, who's got the best one?
Mr. Gatta.
Go ahead, Andy. You may start.
Well, someone else went ooh ooh.
That was me.
So okay, good. I was going to say, because I'm enthusiastic about my pick, but I'm not Arnold Horshack over it.
I'm Horshack over this one.
I think you should go first.
Oh, Mr. Cotta. Some time ago, I found a wonderful... I'm going to step back even farther. Back to the days when I was using Microsoft Windows and tablet PC. Now, tablet PC is something Microsoft's been pushing for a long time. The idea that you have a screen that you can draw on, you can write on, you can, it has text recognition. And Microsoft added an application to its Office suite to go with tablet PC called OneNote, which is really kind of an interesting notebook application. It had text recognition, so you could, handwrite stuff, and it would then be able to search it. Or you could even turn it into pure text, and it did about the same as the Newton. I mean, look, at handwriting recognition has a way to go. But it worked. It was a way to keep all your stuff. I like notebooks. I've used notebooks on the Mac for a while. I thought this was pretty cool. Then I found a program, free program, called Evernote. And this was Windows only, and this is a couple of years ago. Evernote was just incredible. The idea was like it was a grocery list tape. It was just the notes kept on going. You could put any kind of format document in there, text, graphics. It did handwriting recognition. And it's always bugged me that it's not available for the Mac. Well, the folks at Evernote have really taken a step into the 21st century. They've turned it into a web service, and it is now available on Mac, Windows, iPhone, and Windows Mobile. It's kind of like Sketch in the sense that it's in beta right now, and I should say the beta is closed but is about to open any day now, and that's why I'm finally bringing this up, because I just think this is the greatest. Go to Evernote.com. You could sign up for the beta, and soon they'll be inviting people to join in. Right now, it's free. It will take text. It will take graphics. It does an interesting thing with the graphics. It does text recognition on the graphics on the website. So you have a desktop application, and you enter in the notes. It has a clipping application, so you can clip from a web page. You can save the whole web page. I sent him a couple of notes that, for instance, I love the print to PDF features of, say, Yojimbo to also work with Evernote. So you just print a PDF right to Evernote. I'm sure they'll add that eventually. But then what happens is it syncs not to Mac.Mac, but to Evernote servers, and they do the text recognition at that end. So you now all of a sudden you can search for text in your graphics, and it's very, very good. It doesn't have the Sketch capabilities to modify the graphics. It's just really a notebook tool. You can see the same notebook on the web. It has a web interface on your Windows machine. It even has an IMAP interface. So you could set up the IMAP on your iPhone, have a separate Evernote mailbox, and all of your notes look like email messages. All of the text is in there, automatically synced from one to the other. So this is a totally cross-platform solution. It's free right now. I think that the plan is to do a free version and a premium service that would give you more storage and so forth. This is exactly the notebook program I've been looking for, finally. I mean, it's cross-platform, works on the iPhone beautifully. It is free right now. The beta isn't open. I just sent all of you guys invitations, though, because I have a few invitations left. Don't send me any emails, because I just sent out my last ones to the team here. It just does a great job. Syncs very quickly, much more quickly than the .Mac sync. This isn't a great program. I think, Merlin, you're going to want to take a look at it especially.
Yeah, how do you get graphics in? Do you just drag them?
Yeah. If you copy a web page and use the clip feature, the Evernote, clip screenshot into Evernote, it'll do a screenshot, or paste Evernote, it'll paste the graphics in. You've seen it, or are you just looking at it
no,
right
I
now?
No, I just followed your, I was paying attention to everything you guys said as I got set up with the beta.
Good.
That whole thing, you guys, that conversation you had about the thing, was awesome.
Wonderful. The thing was great. You can put it on a USB drive. It's portable.
Wow.
So the idea, it's Google Desktop Search compatible for Windows users. I sent them a couple of notes. One is I want to be able to encrypt individual notes, because I like to store my passwords and serial numbers and these kinds of things. So I'd like to encrypt them so that they're invisible everywhere. I want that print capability so you can send a PDF right into Evernote. I think that's pretty easy to do on the Mac side. Probably the reason it's not there is because it's not non-trivial on the Windows side, and they probably want to keep the two versions together. The Mac version just came out, I think, a week or 2 weeks ago. It's pretty new, and yet quite polished. I think they've done a very nice job with the Mac version. You can email notes to yourself. When you sign up for the beta, you'll get a private email address. So if you take a note, finally, if you take a note on the iPhone, you can mail it to your Evernote. and it will then sync up with your iPhone and all your other devices, including your Mac. So there, I've just started to tap the, you know, scratch the surface of this. This is a very powerful application, and I think a really good example of where web services are going. This is the way it should be. This is called Evernote, free right now from Evernote.com. The beta is closed as I speak. We will open any minute now, but you can sign up right now, and I'm sure you'll get an invitation within the week. And that's my pick, and it's zero Alexis. Now, Andy Inako, you may go.
This is now, I'm safe in saying that many of you listening and many of the people here in this group are nerds, geeks, boffins, whoever you wish to, however we wish to localize
that. I prefer
that.
Prefer to be called an enthusiast.
What if I call you a spurbling? Of course, you would not be able to spell it because you do. You're
anyway, I was about to get off the tangent.
The Geflavin is silent.
Merlin, I'm sorry. I was about to say something. I was going to say something hurtful, and you're the last person in this group that I would want to hurt, Merlin. You are loved.
Clearly, you're not a geek.
But what's a
take that back.
But what exactly is a boffin? That's what I want to know.
An anorak.
You've been listening to too much Alan Bennett.
Yes. There you go. Okay. I'm going to cut right to it. Here is a my pick is the Arduino, which is a, I'll read it from the website. It's an open source electronics prototyping. No, you have to use the voice for this.
Arduino is an open source electronics prototyping platform based on flexible, easy to use hardware and software.
What it is, though, it's a little tiny little computer about the size of half of a 3x5 card that you can program very, very easily using a desktop application on your Mac that can control things like motors, lights, relays, things like that. Read physical pieces of hardware like buttons, sensors, and switches. What you can do is you can very, very easily use it to write pieces of software that will work on this little device and then basically upload it to the device and basically build really cool electronics without having to learn a whole lot of hardware engineering. Like let's say that you were thinking, you know what would be really cool? I don't like to have a little $5 doorbell on my front door. What I want is I want them to press the door, press the doorbell, and then like an animatronic Darth Vader doll mounted above the door starts lighting up and swinging its lightsaber. Meanwhile, upstairs, the my desk side lamp starts flicking on and off to let me know there's someone at the door. That would be somewhat complicated if you wanted to design those circuits yourselves. If you wanted to do it with this little tiny little computer, you could basically write the software to do that in about 12 or 13 lines. It is C++. It is object-oriented C. But if you get a sample application, it's very, very sample code, of which there's plenty. It's very, very easy to see how to basically, well, how do I tell whether a button has been pushed? Well, here's the code for telling how a button's been pushed. Well, how do I activate something through this board that I've wired into this? Well, here's how you activate something that's been plugged into this board. What it is, and it's cheap, it's affordable. If you go to the maker store at makezine.com, you can buy one of these completely built, completely assembled for $34.99. You just plug the
$34.99?
$34.99.
That's great.
You plug it into your Mac, you download free software and free sample projects, and you go down to Radio Shack with $5 in your pocket, walk out with a couple push buttons, a couple LEDs, a couple of DC motors, and by the end of the day, you'll realize that it's the start of the morning because you've been up all night saying, well, okay, how about if I push the button and it makes the light go on, and then the motor lifts a winch that raises a flag. Wow, it works. The first time, I mean, some of us have fun with AppleScript, and some of us have fun writing little bits of software, and some of us even, you know, write web apps. But very, very rarely do we get to make that leap from software that only lives inside a computer to building an actual real physical thing that does cool stuff. And usually it's because, I mean, when I was learning electronics, I learned via the explosion and Braille method, where you wire up a circuit, and then when you hear a pop and you see that blue smoke erupting from the IC, you make a note saying, okay, I guess you don't put 12 volts on that pin, that causes it to blow up. This is an easy way and a cheap way to start building real world electronics that do really, really cool things. If you have this, and this is one of those things where if you have it in your desk drawer, and anytime that you have a simple thing that needs to be built, or just some free time and you need to do something cool with that free time, you'll be playing with it and playing with it and playing with it and doing increasingly heroically stupid and wonderful things with this hardware.
There, you know, it's funny, there's a kind of consumer gadget that you plug in, you know, you add components to, and it's pluggable. This is the real deal. This is breadboarding. This is where you can really do some stuff with it. This is neat. And it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, exactly.
ARDUINO.CC.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to look at the human friendly version of it, you can go to makezine.com, M-A-K-E. Lots of places sell it. I like Make magazine, so I'll give them the plug.
Oh, good. Yeah. They have it at the Maker store then.
Exactly. And you'll see lots of support for it. Lots of, and actually next door to it, a whole bunch of books that show you how to do different projects with it. It's not, it is one of these really popular open source sort of things. So it's not like Lego Mindstorms where you have to buy everything through the Lego Corporation. Right. Hey, wow, someone built a robot, but it's based on the Arduino board. Cool. I have one of those. Let's see how I control servos and motors with the Arduino board.
What is the, is there a chip on it as processor or?
It's a programmable microcontroller chip, but the cool thing, essentially it's a single chip computer all in one IC package. The cool thing, though, is that they've wired it up with all of the support hardware you need to turn it into something as simple as here's the USB port, here's how you send software to it.
Oh, neat.
Here are different pins, so that here's where you hook up an LED to, here's where you hook up a push button.
So you could be a software hacker and play with this as much as a hardware hacker.
Exactly. And if you are a hardware hacker, if you ever had a problem where you need to build a custom ROM or you need to essentially build a really complicated custom circuit, you can essentially take whatever part in your schematic that says, and now here's where you put the data lines for this really complicated circuit, and here's where you put the signal line for the power for this really complicated circuit. You can just essentially build whatever circuit you want in software inside this device and just wire it into whatever big complicated board you already have. I mean, I remember a number of years ago, my girlfriend was really addicted to coffee, where the way to really get to her heart was through the demon coffee bean, whatever. I'm not into coffee myself, so I don't know about that.
That's not cocoa. That's rule number one.
Exactly. That's why she dumped me, because I said cocoa when I meant coffee bean. But I built this thing so that through X10 controllers, so that essentially whenever she hit the snooze button on her alarm clock, it would, I built some custom circuits that would essentially the snooze circuit of her alarm clock would send send a signal to an X10 box right into her coffee maker that would have it turn on. Then there'd be another circuit that I added to the coffee maker that could tell when the ready light had come on, and that would signal back to the alarm clock that, okay, now wake her up because now the coffee is ready.
And you don't think that's why she left you? It was more the cocoa comment.
She feared convenience.
Exactly. That was her test. If she was willing to put up with that, then she was definitely someone I needed.
Once the bugs have worked out, it's really
pleasant. Well, see, I forgot that she doesn't need a mechanical device to wake her up when coffee's ready. She just psychically knows it.
Coffee's ready.
But the point is that this was like, it wasn't like really complicated project, but it took me like a few days of like figuring out what circuits, what parts I needed, getting power MOSFETs together, all that sort of stuff. Whereas with this, as soon as I saw the specs for this board and I saw some sample code, I realized that, wow, that would be this board for $34.99 plus 12 lines of code to basically get all these, wire up these sensors that are automatically there. Just
this looks like so much fun. I wish I had time to do stuff like this.
It's like Legos for people who are not fearful of motors and electrocution.
And there's a full language that goes with it. So you really can control it by software. And oh, this is neat.
Exactly.
I would go out and buy it all, but I know I'd never use it.
I'm going to buy one for my son's birthday.
Yeah, I think for kids, what a great way to get them into digital technology. This is really neat.
We're just going to give our daughter an outlet and a fork.
Let her learn by doing.
Leo, we believe in the old-fashioned way.
That's right. Damn tootin'. Merlin Mann, what do you got for us?
Well, mine's kind of lame because it's one I have mentioned before, but it's something that I find myself using so much that I want to underscore it. I mentioned earlier that, like a lot of people, I rely on a whole kind of raft of different plugins for Safari. You know, Safari is never going to be Firefox, probably.
No.
You're never going to have that level of flexibility. And I have to say, there is some stuff that I use Firefox for. But for my day-to-day stuff, I really love using Safari. Let me just get this URL right. If you want to find out ways to pimp your Safari, you should go to pimpmysafari.com, which is my pal John's site with lots of really great information about doing cool stuff. And one of the holy trinity of Safari plugins, which would include Saft and PithHelmet, is Safari Stand. And Safari Stand does something that I want to just concentrate on today because I use it so much that I have to imagine other people could benefit from this, which is, once you have installed Safari Stand and got it running, you know the little, I don't know what you call it, you call it a throbber? You know the thing in the upper right-hand corner of your browser? You used to call it a throbber on IE because it would kind of annoyingly swirl this animation. You get added functionality commands under that throbber once you've installed Safari Stand. My favorite of which is...
I'm just going to clip that little quote right out there.
What did I say?
You get functionality with Stand under the throbber button. I don't know. It's just,
If you can stimulate the throbber in such a way that the pop-up...
Put on a Tony Bennett record.
Now you want to put on some Johnny Mathis and click the
whenever
throbber.
Whenever your throbber stands up, I want to push your button. I like it.
Anyway, when you do that, there's all this stuff under there.
And see how dignified he's trying to make this. When dignity just left, I saw the taillights of dignity pulling out the driveway on this show about an hour ago.
I am your Saft. Let's Sabitha edit
filthy,
together.
Filthy brake lights driving away. And so
adjust
when you do that, right?
Baby, you'll find that you have full read and write access to my heart.
There's a way to get a clip and field underneath the throbber. Anyway, all excess moisture should be wiped away. And what you find is several really neat little functional things. So you're on a page somewhere, and you click the throbber. You got four links that buttons that now appear under here. Copy title. Copy title and URL, copy link HTML tag, copy link as markdown. Oh, why is this awesome? You're on a page somewhere, and how many times a day do you want to grab the HTML code for a page? Well, this makes it really easy. For me, I live in markdown. Everything I do in life happens in markdown, which is kind of a John Gruber's simple, deceptively simple subset of HTML. Anyhow, so I can go on any page that I'm on. I can go and just hit the throbber, grab copy link as markdown, and that goes right into my buffer. I can go to any text file, whatever, drop that in. Super useful. I use that all the time. Second, the other thing related to this, if you have Safari Stand installed, anytime you're on a page and you see a link somewhere, you can right-click on it, and you get the option copy link HTML tag, which means, so being on a page, you can grab the HTML for a link, or you can just click on the Ahref, right on the web page, and copy that right into your clipboard as well. These are things that probably make a lot more sense when you're doing them. But if you're like me and you're constantly posting stuff, putting stuff on, Tumblr and whatnot, this is such a fast way to grab a whole bunch of links. And if you're using something like Quicksilver, you can just go copy a million times. Those all go into your clipboard on Quicksilver, and then you just go paste to drop them all in.
Does this work on 3.1?
Well, Leon, I am that guy now where I'm waiting. So I believe I saw a Mac update email this morning that said there's a new Safari Stand. But, really, this is all in the service. It's partly in the service of saying that, because I think if you're a web nerd, that's really useful. But if you're going to be on Safari and you're like me, you're adamant about not switching over completely to Firefox, grab a copy of Safari Stand, grab a copy of Saft, and grab a copy of Pith Helmet, because the functionality that those three things give you is pretty terrific. There's other good stuff out there, but that's my favorite.
I actually use a Firefox plugin called Colt, C-O-L-T, that does exactly that, and I desperately need it and love it, and it doesn't work on Firefox 3, and I'm in the same boat.
That's so funny.
Yeah,
well, this is the thing, and like really, I think once you get past the douchey top 10 list, the reason life hacky stuff works is because you learn where there are tiny little bits of sand in your gears, and if you can clear that out, you're going to really speed things up. This is a terrific example of that. If you're writing HTML, first of all, if you're not writing your HTML in Markdown, you're probably wasting a lot of your time. Or Textile is another great one. This is a super fast way to streamline your process. And again, it's almost like this Unix-ish approach to being productive, where you are kind of slightly improving your productivity on all these little different tasks. And in the aggregate, that ends up saving you a lot of time.
Little tools that do one thing well.
I'm going to say, I'll try the domain name Hetima, HETIMA.com/Safari. It's mostly in Japanese, but there's an English version. As ever, you're better off probably just to Google the one word Safari Stand.
Or go to pimpmysafari.com because it's there.
Pimp My Safari is a terrific site.
It's there with everything else. So
it's actually at the top of the page, I believe. There's the essentials. If you only install three, make it these.
Yeah. Very cool. That's, it's funny because that's one reason I still use Firefox over Safari. I'd like to use Safari, but I don't have that capability to right click and get a HTML for a link. And that's just...
I've got a Firefox pick if you want one.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, do you mind?
No.
Gmail Manager, do you guys use that?
Oh, no, I don't know that.
if you are somebody who, let's say hypothetically, you're monitoring several Gmail accounts for different people. Hypothetically, you would never give yourself extra Gmail accounts because that's not kosher.
No.
But hypothetically, if you've got five or six Gmail accounts, this lets you go enter all of your information, your password and whatnot, and very quickly jump to a login to Gmail for any of those accounts. Ooh. Second, it gives you down in the status bar, it shows you for your preferred account how many uncounts and the count for all the labels and whatnot as well, with a summary of all of the inbox in general.
Excellent.
Gmail manager, and I love it.
Excellent. Two for one, both zero Alexes, and now the king of the Alex, Mr. Alex Lindsay, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I actually have something to use all the free time that you've created.
That's why you're after Merlin. Merlin creates free time, you spend it.
I spend it. And this is a zero Alex. I'm actually repeating a little bit. We've made some developments towards this whole marathon process that we did. So I'm picking Marathon Infinity. We talked about marathon in general last week, but this week we really want to get everyone to go download it. So,
oh gosh, yes. I completely forgot.
Here's the deal. On next Monday.
Not this Monday, but the following Monday from now.
No, this coming Monday. This coming Monday.
Okay.
The Monday right in front of whenever you get this, right? Because we're going to put this out before Monday.
We put it out today. So Monday the 24th, Monday. March 24th.
The 24th, we're going to, at 1 o'clock, we're going to start the first Marathon Monday. And so for 1 hour, we're just going to, you know, kill each other for fun. You know, and so the idea, and here's the thing, is Marathon is free. It's Mac, PC, Linux. It is, it's been open sourced. And it's a little hard to get your head around when you first start just getting it installed because it's open source. And so the next Mac Break that comes out, Mac Break Video, which should come out today, is going to be my own little instruction how to get it installed, like where to go download stuff, how to get started, how to get...
You're going to use ScreenFlow to make that?
Yes, I did, which I like.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, I really like it. It has some trouble figuring out what the front window is at times, but like with Firefox or something like that. But in general, ScreenFlow is the one that I kind of have started using a lot.
So you're going to do a screencast on setting up Marathon Infinity.
Yeah, just how to get started, how to join, where to, you know, some of the stuff that you need to do. And hopefully people will go up there and, you know, download it. You just go to Bungie. The bottom line is what you have to do is go to source.bungie.org. And download the Infinity and download the Aleph and drop the Aleph into the Infinity. And then when you run Aleph, it'll open up Marathon and then you'll be ready to rock and roll.
Andy, can you do an X10 extension for this?
I think that's what we need.
Now Shosh actually built a DMG that will just install it.
He did?
Yeah, so
oh, that guy's great. He takes our show notes, by the way. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so he just threw the whole thing in. So all you got to do is drag it. It's just a folder with the two of them on
where,
it.
Where do we get that?
That is at dropbox.pixelcore.com/alex/marathon.zip. So it's just a zip file you can click. You know, we'll put it in the show notes and I also show it in the thing. So Shosh put this thing together. That's really all you need on the Mac is just to download that, drag one folder into the other one, and then you'll have what you need. Follow the instructions, play with it between now and Monday, and then if it goes successfully, we'll just keep on playing.
How big is that DMG, Alex?
It's like 45 megs.
Why don't you also, because it's a little easier, send it to my Dropio account. Sure. So Dropio, dropio.io/twit.
Yeah, I'm going to have you email that.
Yeah, and that way it'll be very easy for people to, let's see, oh, well, that's not going to work either, because that's not, I don't know if you could download stuff from that. It's easy to upload stuff. I have to set it up to download. Let me see if I can figure out how to do that.
Okay.
Well, anyway, you can get the thing bit by bit from Bungie. That's probably the best place to go.
If you go to source.bungie.net, all you have to do is two downloads. There's one called Aleph, which is the actual application, and there's the Infinity maps and source files and everything else. And so you just download those two files. You drop the Aleph application into the Bungie, into the Infinity folder, and you're ready to rock and roll. You know, and so the thing is that for those of you who have just gotten into the Mac, or for those of you who are younger than, you know, whatever, 35, Marathon was like the classic, first person shooter for many of us for many years. And we love it. And I love it. And I didn't realize that it was open source. And I'm hoping that people will come play with us.
What time Monday? Oh, I'll be there. What time Monday?
Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I believe that is...
I'm getting a massage then.
You are?
Yeah. That's going to be a tough choice. I'll have to think about it.
Yeah, I think you got to move the massage because what you need is to massage it too, because you're going to play for an hour.
Are we only play for an hour?
It's only an hour. It's just going to be 1 to 2
And then
o'clock.
My thumb will be sore anyway.
Be careful on the throbber.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm hoping that people will come play with us. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I've been having a lot of fun. There are a handful of people out there playing right now, but I think that we could. The only thing I'm concerned about is us possibly pushing the servers that kind of manage the tracking a little hard. But try it, and we'll see how the first week goes. We'll do it for a couple of weeks, and if people are really into it, we'll just keep on building from there.
Sash can email twit@drop.io, email the DMG to there, and it will be in the drop.io folder. If you go to drop.io/twit, the password is MacBreak, and you'll be able to download the DMG from there. That might be the easiest way to do it.
Sure.
That way it's a just simple public folder that they can get it from. And it is open source, so we can do that.
Yes.
That's exciting.
I think it'll be a lot.
Maybe I could play while I'm getting a massage.
There you go.
Might be interesting.
Let me think about that.
Well, we are out of time, but boy, what a fun show this has been. And a reminder, next week, Patrick Wilson of Weezer, the drummer from Weezer, who requested to be on Mac Break Weekly because he loves it so much, will be joining us. And I think we will really have a good discussion about music and so forth at that time.
And he co-wrote. I didn't know he co-wrote. He's in the Reynolds, too, which is an amazing band. But I didn't know he co-wrote some of the Weezer songs. I thought it was all Pure Rivers. But he co-wrote My Name is Jonas, which is one of my favorite Weezer songs.
Well, I could tell this is going to be a Weezer fest. So, gang, get your Weezer catalog out. Listen to the songs so that when the concert happens, you'll know them all. And we will see you next Wednesday. Again, that's our new time, next Wednesday, for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannacco, thank you for joining us. He's in the Chicago Sun-Times. You can find him at the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, CWOB.com, right?
Absolutely correct.
Do you need the dub-dub-dub still or not?
I like the dub-dub-dub. It gives me that extra me time that I need in the middle of a busy day. Mm-hmm. Like an International General Foods coffee, I think.
Okay.
you may just
have you tried their exotic massage? It's very refreshing. It has a slight taste of mint. It's very refreshing.
I just
for an
tried it
coffee.
You do need the www.cwob.com.
If you tell them that you do a podcast, they wear the leather gloves.
Oh yeah,
they don't like skin to skin contact.
No, just don't wear the gardening gloves. They're rough.
Pleased to be covering yourself in Purell.
Merlin Mann is an expert on productivity. Who'd have thunk it? 43.
True. I am an expert. I'm an expert in the same way that a drunk is an expert on drinking.
There you go. 43.
Which I'm also an expert in.
Another story for another day. He'll do his, what were we talking about? Brooks?
Oh, my Foster Brooks.
Your Foster Brooks. He'll do his Foster Brooks a little later on. Who is that behind those Foster Brooks? It's Merlin Mann, 43folders.com. And Alex Lindsay is the head of the Pixel Corps at pixelcorps.com. If you want to get involved in all of this stuff, that's the place to go. He also produces This Week in Media, This Week in Photography, some really great podcasts.
We had, by the way, we had a great This Week in Media, which will be coming out tomorrow, actually. But we recorded a great one. I highly suggest people check it out.
Search for TWIM on iTunes or just go to pixelcorps.tv. That's the podcast site for all of those great podcasts. Scott Bourne couldn't be with us, but in his absence, I'm going to plug This Week in Photography, Podango.com, and his vest made entirely of iPhones, available online at girlsgonegeek.tv. On behalf of the entire MacBreak crew, I'd like to thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another MacBreak is broke.